So as I mentioned, unfortunately, Elise Welker had a family emergency and can't be here today. It's always fun to try to give someone else's presentation, but I'm going to try my best to do that. I tried to winnow Elise's her presentation down to the five key action steps, the five steps to work more efficiently with your university press office. And the first thing to really keep in mind is that your press office, every university now has a press office. Sometimes it's called the Office of Public Affairs, the Office of Public Relations, the Media Relations Department, the Press Relations Department. But the reason that those offices exist is because your university wants you to do press, and they are paying people at the university to assist you with doing press. One of the reasons is because it's good for the university when your research is covered in the media. So they have people who are trained in communication skills and media relations to assist you. So the first step to making the relationship work is to meet the press officer. You should be on a first name basis with your press officer. Go over, walk over to their office, introduce yourself. They won't think you're crazy. They won't think this is a person who just wants to get media. They will say, this is a person who's going to make my job easier. This is a person I can rely on, I can call on when we get questions from the press. The second step to working with your press office is to get them involved in your work early in the process. As soon as you have a copy of any manuscript that's accepted for publication, you should notify your press office so that they can start to work with you on the media plan and they can start planning for placements in local media. They will have great relationships with members of the local press and members of the national press because they're not only focused on your department, they're focused on research that's coming out from all over the university. So use these relationships. Let them use those relationships to help you plan press. Anytime there's an update on one of your projects, if you get additional funding for one of your projects, if there's a letter written to the journal where your study was published, let them know about that. Anytime you get IRB approval for a new project, they want to know about that. Anytime there's a new topic or a new area of research that's surfacing as becoming more important in the field, and you feel that you could be someone who could comment to the media on other scientist studies in the field as one of the overall commenters that Karen was describing to provide additional context, when you feel that you have that type of expertise, let your media office know about that. The third action step is to really work with your press relations office to find families that will provide context when it's time to do press about your studies. They can work with the families to achieve a consistency of message. They can screen the families. They can talk to the families and prepare them. They can give them a little bit of media training, make them comfortable with the process so that you don't have to be involved in that. They can practice with them. They can give them additional feedback. They also can help you to obtain legal consent for any HIPAA issues or any privacy issues. The Media Relations Office can take care of all of that. Sometimes they need to sign a formal release. That's not really part of the scientist's job. That's part of the press office job. So work with them to find families and prepare those families together. And your role here is to suggest families, families who you've met because they participated in the study, families who you've met because they've come into the clinic and might be participants in the study or have some relationship, and who you think would be good candidates to participate in the story. The fourth action step is your media office can provide you with media training. Often they have funding to send you to formal media training, or often they provide media training workshops in their office. They don't always publicize these because there's usually so much interest in people who want to attend them, but if you ask, often they'll say, oh yes, I'm having a media training during lunch a week from Thursday, and you can go and you can learn more skills. The press office can also be the bad guy, and let them be the bad guy. Sometimes, although Karen, and I agree with what Karen said, it's important to call back a reporter quickly when they call. If you have had a bad experience with a reporter in the past, there's no reason to call back that reporter. They are not the IRS. Just because a reporter calls you does not mean you have to return their call. What you can do if they continue to call you is you can have someone in the press office call them back and say, Dr. So-and-so is not available to comment on that issue. And then you don't have to be the bad guy. They can be the bad guy. They can also, so anytime you want to avoid an interview, you can have the press office do that. Again, I also agree with the idea of having someone from the press office be on the phone when you do an interview to make sure that you're not misquoted. Be sure to let the reporter know that someone from the press office is on the phone. I think that makes, that provides a little bit more rigor. The reporter may take a few extra moments to make sure that they get the quotes exactly accurate. The press office can also help you to stick to your media plan. When you write down the three key points in your media plan, discuss them with your press officer. Again, this is someone who has communication skills training and can really help you hone your message and choose the key details that are most likely to be picked up by reporters. And that will help maximize the chances that your quotes will wind up in the story. And then the fifth action step to working with your press office is make sure you are in the front of their mind. Again, they are working with scientists from around the university. You want to make sure that you are communicating with your press officer very frequently, once a week, that you pick up the phone from time to time and speak with them on the phone, not only by email, that they know you, that they see that you are a person who is capable of communications because you communicate with the press office. Again, I also want to reemphasize, and Elise wanted to reemphasize, make sure you're available when the press office calls and says, I have a reporter from USA Today or from the Boston Globe who wants to speak to you. Please don't say, okay, I can talk to them a week from Thursday. You need to be able to speak to them really within the hour, if not later in that day. Return calls promptly and enthusiastically. So many reporters have told me when I've recommended scientists to them that they call them back, but it was very obvious that they really didn't want to participate. So if you are going to call a reporter back, try to participate enthusiastically. So those were Elise's key points. I know she had more to share, and hopefully maybe she'll share them next year. But at this point, I think we're going to open it up to questions for all of the panelists. Before we do, I want to thank the panelists for their enthusiastic participation. And if there are any questions, we can take them now. The Confex team has asked that if you have a question, you please step up to the microphone because this session is being recorded for the website.
Hi, this is a question that's mostly for Dana, but anyone else is welcome to weigh in. This is about communicating with families about the pace of research. I work in technologies for autism, so often when we're interacting directly with families, teachers, schools, it will be in an event where we have a demo, but it's certainly not in the right shape to go out the door, use on your home computer, whatever. And it can be really, really difficult to communicate to a parent or a teacher why there's something in front of them that we're showing them, but they can't have it yet, right now. And what would be your advice for explaining that type of situation and that pace of the research process?
I think, and I welcome anybody else on the panel to comment, I think my first thought would be when you're gathering people, when you're setting it up, the invitation or what have you, is put that in there, that this is preliminary technology, this isn't ready, but we wanted you to demonstrate, we wanted you to test it out, see what you think, provide us feedback, and then we're going to go from there, and it's going to take a while. I think to lay the ground rules at the very beginning, either when they're invited or at the initial presentation, helps. They are going to be pushing you because they want the answers faster than you can possibly even start a study. But I think if you're very clear from the outset, that can help.
I'm just going to say, I think that's a common complaint with journalism that we tend to, we've cured cancer numerous times, for instance. It's something that responsible science journalists are more careful about, putting the in preliminary research, not ready for a long time, theoretically, But a lot of times people read through those kinds of phrases. They're those phrases that you tell people to say, but that other people tend to gloss over. So just repeating it and making it clear, you know, if you are talking to a journalist, please do make it clear to them so that they have some shot of making it clear to their readers. But it is a common problem, I agree.
Hi, my name is Nick Lang from Harvard Med School, McLean Hospital. I also had a question for Dana. Thank you very much for your presentation. I think families are justifiably a bit distrustful of science and because there's been so much out there, and I think the media has played a large part in that, unfortunately. So I think your comments were very helpful to the people that are supposed to benefit is the individual and the families, not any of us, including the media or scientists or clinicians or anybody. So my question would be is there any sort of rating system? I mean, I've been interviewed and it's gone from the bottom to the top, and some of the things that I see on Safari site, for instance, have been very, very good. Is there any way within your organization that you can grade these, or also maybe even filter the press offices so they don't? I got a call that says from the London Times, and it was the Daily Mail. You know, I mean, things like that. Is there any, the general question, is there any ranking or filtering that can be done on your side that can benefit the people that this is supposed to benefit?
Are you asking, is there a ranking of publications or media outlets?
Yeah, the story. I mean, there's a truthiness. You know, that at Harvard Law School, we had a truthiness in medians conference. It was great. And there was something about trying to sort of gauge the factual content. Some thought it would be impossible in autism with the medium, but I disagree with that. Is there some conceivable way of gauging the truthiness of something, not Stephen Colbert way, but so much, okay, what is the accuracy here? And it doesn't address the echo chambers, which are just irrational beliefs that are not going to change with any evidence whatsoever. Is there any thought or ability to do that kind of thing to help the community better through the media?
Yeah, I hope I am going to answer your question. Jane's commenting too, so I'll pass to her next. But I think for us at Autism Speaks is what you're asking, right?
Well, in general.
Okay, so for us, as far as what we put out on, you mentioned the Safari website, we'll put out news posts on items that we think are worthy. We actually publicize works that we think are worthy, and we'll put some of our top spokespeople out to comment on them. But things that we post on our website and on our blog that are from us are things that we believe are worthy and important. There are comments that may be made on the blogs or some of those which people will make their own thoughts about those, and we don't really regulate and control that too much. We allow that people can tell us what they think or tell each other what they think, and they engage in a lot of debates on the blogs. But what were you going to say?
I think a lot of it starts with the public relations or the press office person. Because, for example, if research is done one place and media comes, for example, Karen picks up the phone and calls me, Jane, and said, Jane, who do you have at Autism Speaks who can help me understand this paper? I'm first going to make an assessment. Who is Karen? What has she written about? I know that Karen writes for legitimate and credible papers. And I'll ask, who are you writing for today? Are you writing for Nature? Are you writing for the Boston Globe, USA Today? So I'm able to now go to my client, Autism Speaks, and say, this writer for this outlook, for this outlet, is looking for comment about this study, and it's going to be a consumer story or it's going to be a scientific technical story. So the truthiness comes, who are we going to be talking to? And sometimes a reporter like Karen will say to me, Jane, can someone help me understand this? And that's where that built relationship comes in, where some of the Autism Speak scientists will help the reporter look at the study and say, here are the strengths, here are the weaknesses, and here's what else needs to be done for this to become, remember I have the, is it ready for prime time? So we take that responsibility very seriously, and we work together in order to bring the truthiness to the story. Now, there are a lot of other stories that don't go through that process, and someone may report about it, and they'll report about research that really wasn't ready for prime time. Okay, so it's harder for the community to look to say, all right, who is this scientist reporting on it? Because as my mother used to say to me, oh, he must know what he's talking about. He's on the evening news. And I said, no, he had the faster PR representative. So that's very, very difficult, and I can't explain it. If something's really wrong, you can, as an expert in your field, contact the editor and the producer and say, I just think you ought to be aware you produced a story on, you ran a story on, there were some weaknesses that perhaps your reporter didn't have access to, and in the future, please come to me.
Then it's too late. I think
it's too late for that story.
Here we have a truthiness and trustiness is what you both have identified, and I guess what I'm asking is about, there are all sorts of trust networks, and what you're saying, if I just want to repeat it quickly, is that find those trust networks that work for you, in the media or the family or whatever, and then through that you can be led, either if it's on the playground or on whatever blog you're on, to get back to something that's going to actually help.
And the unfortunate truth right now is any person with a cell phone is a journalist.
Well, that's why I'm saying the media might be able to do something.
Well, I think in addition to the spectrum of truthiness, there's also out-and-out falsiness. I mean, you have reporters now where it's not the situation where you're doing a one-on-one interview with a reporter, but you have a reporter who comes into an event where you are speaking and completely inaccurately reports what you have said. You cannot let that go unchecked. It is never too late to make that correction. The reporter may not issue a retraction or a correction, but that reporter will remember that you called them out, and they will... If you explain to them why what they wrote was incorrect or taken out of context, they will remember it the next time. I mean, their goal is to do good work. I don't think they purposely set out to be false. So if you take that time and write to them or call them on the phone and let them know that you saw their work and why it was inaccurate, they will think twice the next time. So I don't think it's ever too late.
My goodness, everybody here is very tall, aren't they? Ms. Singer, I just wanted to say that I really appreciated what you said about the scientist's unique position as the bringer of context to the public through the media. I think that's a very important point. And as an autistic adult myself, I'm wondering what thoughts you on the panel have about how you can help scientists connect their expertise with autistic people's own perspective and our expertise to provide that kind of context that you were talking about.
Well, I think one of the things that the advocacy organizations do, in addition to the PR firms doing this, is we keep lists of parents, of individuals with autism who are willing to speak with the media, who are talented at speaking to the media. Sometimes we will get a call from a local newspaper in Kansas City, and they'll say, I'm looking for a mother who has two children with autism, one needs to be a son, and I need the mother to be divorced. Okay, you know, well, that's no longer journalism. We call that casting. but we actually keep a database of people so that we are able to provide access to reporters, access to particular types of individuals for reporters who have specific needs, because maybe they're doing a story on divorce and autism, and that's why they need that. So I'd say the best thing to do if you are an individual with autism who's willing and eager to participate in media is contact the Autism Science Foundation, Autism Speaks, your local organizations, and let them know so that when the press calls them, because the press won't know to call you, but the press will call Dana, the press will call us, and we can then send them to you.
Well, in interest of full disclosure, I'm Carol Greenberg. I'm one of the editors of Thinking Person's Guide to Autism. So
well, they can call you then.
They can call me, yes. Thank you.
And another comment is that whenever we talk to media on behalf of Autism Speaks, when we talk to media about a specific study, even if they come asking for an expert, we will automatically say, would you like to talk to individuals? Would you like to talk to families? We can help you. So we proactively make that offer. And many times, a reporter has a preconceived notion, as Allison was saying, casting. You know, I want somebody who has two children, and it's got to be a boy and a girl. I want somebody that's two boys. I want somebody that's two boys, and they were just diagnosed within the last 6 months. So we're not always able to assist, but we always make that offer. And then as the organization builds relationships through its walks, through its volunteers, through all of its outreach, we collect compelling stories. We collect profiles of interesting people. And we will often look at those profiles and say, this is the basis for a good story that happens to be supported by this portfolio of research we're doing. And we'll do a proactive pitch saying, would you like to hear about this issue that's supported by this research? So it works in both directions.
So one of the things that's changed in the journalism industry in the last 10 years is that you don't need me as much as you used to. That the public can go, people in the public or in institutions can go directly to other people in the public without needing a journalist in the middle. But you can also reach people like me via Twitter, I follow you guys, and Facebook and whatever, and just set up your own relationships with journalists without an institution and reach the public without the journalists and without an institution. And so obviously you're great at that, but I think you can think more freely about those relationships than the way it used to be, which was you got to have the media in order to get your message out.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay, well, thank you all for coming, and again, thank you to our panelists, and I will just leave you with, please participate in press. I think it's everyone's responsibility, as we said, to participate in press. It's good for you, it's good for your university, and it's good for society at large. Families want to know the great research that you're doing, and I think they're entitled to hear about the great research that you're doing. So again, thank you so much.